kids nowadays, I think they start with like sexual experimentation a lot younger. Yeah. And it's just so saturated into everything that they see and experience, which I'm just saying now as a parent is totally terrifying. But yeah, it's in everything and everywhere.
Yeah, it seems that, like, in this article, the Economist article says that, you know, STD prevention, the public spending on STD prevention has fallen by 40% in America since 2003.
That's got to be a huge part, too.
And that's interesting to think about how it seems that the sexualization of both men and women is much more prevalent nowadays. It's also much more readily available to people at younger ages, too.
Yeah.
So, and obviously I think that's another issue with technology and things like that, social media.
You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. Now, here's your hosts, Nick and Shannon Birch.
Thanks for stopping by and checking out another edition of the Addicted to Fitness podcast. Might I say, the 5-star rated Addicted to Fitness podcast.
Yes.
That's right. We have a 5-star rating in the iTunes and Apple Podcast app. And if you haven't done so already, please add to that 5-star rating. If you want to give us less than 5 stars, I'm not interested. No, I'm just kidding. We want your honest opinion, guys. And please leave a review because we're going to read those reviews in our listeners talk back section.
Yes. And you can leave them not just on like the show in general. If you have like a particular favorite episode, just feel free to let us know how you enjoyed it.
Yes, of course. And there's other ways to get a hold of us. And you can find out about all those ways at addictedtofitnesspodcast.com.
Correct.
That is the site's website that contains everything from our show notes to our shop page. So you guys need more details about each individual episodes, you can find it there along with the ATF products that we give our seal of approval that you guys can...
Tried and true.
Exactly. You guys can shop on Amazon or our other podcast affiliates, Stick Mobility and the Hemp Coffee Exchange. So check out that website. Bookmark it now. All right, so we're going to jump into a really quick training recap because we have some great topic discussions that we wanted to get to this week. So my training recap, it's something I'm trying to restart, trying to my morning routine, try to get this back into my morning routine, and that is a 10-minute morning mobility session. So when I get out of bed, go into the other spare bedroom where I kind of get everything gets ready for the day, and I run through a series of mobility movements. I've been doing some basically total bodies for upper back, scapular mobility, some hangs on the chin-up bar, some down dog into child's pose, things you guys might be familiar with, and then some other movements that are really mobility focused. So it helps me get ready for the day. And I'm really trying to be more diligent about doing that each morning because with my training schedule the way it is, I need to be stretching and doing mobility work each day because it's getting tougher and tougher to drag myself out of bed each morning without being sore, I should say. I have no problem waking up, but it's the aches and pains trying to minimize those.
Yeah, I could understand that.
Yeah, in addition to my morning mobility stuff, I also try to do a little bit of a cold shower right after I do that mobility work, after I jump in the shower, of course. So hit about 30 to 60 seconds of a cold shower, which helps me wake me up.
Like right at the end?
Yes, right at the end. Cap it off, and then also trying to do daily meditations on the Headspace app.
Yes.
So I really like doing that. That kind of sets me up for success. And it only takes about, 30 minutes, those three things. So it's really necessary. It's why I kind of get up a couple hours before I have to leave in the morning. So it's really helped me.
I understand that.
That's kind of a little snippet of a so-called training recap for me. What about you?
Well, this past week I did something I haven't done in months, which was a HIIT workout.
Ooh, all right.
I really steered clear of HIIT workouts most of this past year because I was breastfeeding and Just not wanting to add too much high intensity interval training into the mix.
Right.
So I even like, even when I did spinning, I tried not to do like high intensity. It was like moderate with short, short bits of high intensity probably. Right.
Yeah.
But I've mostly just done a lot more yoga.
Yeah.
So adding that back in this week, I was super sore for like 3 days. And every time I had to bend down to get Ella, I was like crying inside. I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot I had some of these muscles.
Yeah.
But speaking of picking Ella up, that also has been a excellent workout because now that she is fully mobile.
Yeah.
She is getting into everything in and under and on most things. And I feel like I've had to increase my range of motion as far as to, like, we sit on the floor a lot more than we used to. And, like, it's getting up from the floor and then down and then up and then down and up and then down and then over and down. So that also, by the end of the weekends, usually for the last, I'd say, like, month, I've noticed that my thighs, like my quads specifically, are pretty tight.
Yeah.
And a little bit sore. So that's also helping, but I'm definitely going to start adding a bit more of the HIIT workouts back in.
Nice.
And I think just try to keep up with getting the yoga in as much as I can and kind of ease back on the Peloton in the last few months, but I'll get back on the bike at some point.
Right, yeah. Figurative. The goal is essentially just to stay active.
It's just to move. Right. Yeah, like you said, you know, even the mornings that I don't really do any, like, training.
Right.
Or I don't do any, like, full practice or anything, I still get out of bed and I still do about 5 to 10 minutes of just, like, some very gentle yoga stretches or few positions, and I just hold it for a little bit long just to kind of release those tight areas. Right. Sometimes it's muscular, and sometimes I think it's like fascia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The connective tissue that just like tightens up when you've been sitting a lot or you've been doing one particular pose a lot.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, that kind of gives a nice segue into our first topic of discussion, activity levels for adults. There's a recent study that was released, I guess it'd be a couple weeks when you guys hear this, but a recent one this year that talked about how the worldwide activity level has gone down. It's actually it's a study released by the Lancet Global Health Journal. Basically, it contained 358 surveys and collected data on nearly 2 million people who reported their activity levels both at work and at home. Okay, and participants included people 18 and older in 168 countries.
Yeah, and when this study came out, you might remember this. I mean, it really was. It was only like maybe like a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And when it came out, it was everywhere. Like the WHO.
Yeah,
WHO. Not the band. the World Health Organization, like, has their own statement on it, and I mean, it's, this study has been picked up across the world. It was pretty jarring, I think, because you expect the world to be getting healthier.
Yeah.
You don't expect this kind of thing.
And they base kind of activity levels, the standard for activity levels based, actually, which is prescribed by the WHO, which you just mentioned, the World Health Organization, is 150 minutes of moderate intensity or 75 minutes of vigorous intensive physical activity each week. That's the recommended level for adults. So let's see, what's that? 150 minutes per week divided by 7. So it's like what? 22 minutes per day.
Yeah.
22 minutes per day of moderate exercise and about a little over 10 minutes. No, is that right? 75 minutes of vigorous. Yeah. So about 10 minutes of vigorous exercise per day. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're talking about. The standard is to could be considered active. So there are people that the trend is that people are below that. The worldwide trend is going below, so the inactivity levels are going up. So kind of based on, you know, that those studies that, and they associate inactivity or insufficient physical activity with chronic conditions like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, dementia, and even some forms of cancer.
Yeah.
And it's, let's give it a little bit more kind of into the statistics of this study, is that more than a quarter of adults, 1.4 billion people worldwide, and they kind of extrapolated that from the 2 million people who took the surveys, were inadequately active in 2016 compared to 23.3% in 2010. Okay, so you went from about 25% in 2000, or went from 23% to up to 25% this year over the last about 15 years. Is that right? Yeah, no, 6 years. Excuse me. So, and they also said no improvement has been seen worldwide levels of exercise since 2001. Wow, and with the high incomes showing an increase of 5% in inactivity levels between 2001 and 2016.
So basically, we're just doing less. And specifically, the like higher income, more well-off countries, they including the United States,
yep,
are dropping at a decent clip.
Right. Yeah, and I'm kind of makes sense that higher income companies. Higher income countries are the level of inactivity is rising, you know. It's, you know, when you have higher income, I guess you have more disposal for things or leisurely activities that are not associated with basically being physically active.
Yeah, I think they basically, like, they summed it up as really technology and the access to technology, yep, and kind of the laziness that comes with advanced technology. You know, you're spending more of your time in front of a computer. Yeah. You're spending more of your time on video games. You're spending more of your time in your car.
Yeah, and even at the jobs, too. Yeah, even the job type of field has changed. It's a little bit different in high-income countries, you know, a little bit more, as you mentioned, computer-based, yeah, things or IT or any things that don't require physical labor, essentially.
Yeah, whereas the lower income, those people are probably taking much more physical jobs. Mm-hmm. They're probably walking a lot more, and they're keeping their activity levels higher.
Yeah, and one area that actually has seen some increase in activity is East and Southeast Asian countries. They registered healthy gains in both their economies and their exercise levels between 2001 and 2016. These are some blurbs from the article, guys. That region registered 26% of adults with insufficient activity in 2001, and yet only 17% in 2016. So they had about almost a 10% decrease in inactivity.
Yeah.
So this is, they talked about China being kind of the leaders in that region too, because their economy is doing well, so it seems to have more effect or positive effects on the amount of leisure time people have, which, mm-hmm, is interesting, you know, because China, you think the communist, China's not communist anymore,
no,
right?
I don't think so.
No, you're right.
I'm not sure on, like, the whole government.
No, I think they're pretty free open market, that's right, because of the whole trade things. I don't know. We don't get political here.
Yeah, we're not political.
Yeah, experts. Exactly. But it's interesting. In this article, they talked to some experts, and they got their ideas. Well, what's the cause? I mean, high income companies, you would think, or high income countries, they have more disposals to gym and things like personal training or subscription based fitness apps or even things like
all
that.
All these things technology allows us.
Mm-hmm. And they said, and it's even the mandates. Like, I mean, we have in the United States, remember the, is it the presidential fitness test or something like that you did in high school?
Yeah, I loved that thing.
Yeah, so it's like, almost like, yeah, mandated physical activity now, but it seems to not be working. And they talk about it in this article, and it says it shows that we need to demonstrate lifestyle modifications that can be adopted by most of the public and get away from sending people to gyms.
So, yeah, well, I think honestly is the biggest difference, because in American culture, it's your lifestyle isn't centered around activity. Your mm-hmm. lifestyle is mostly you sitting on your ass. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we miss out on huge chunks of time where we could be spent moving.
Yep.
You know, like if we actually had a 2-hour break in the middle of the day versus a 15-minute break at your desk.
Yep.
Like, that would be a different situation. People might actually get out. They might do something more. If we had less of a reliance on cars.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I mean, that's huge. Yep. I mean, especially we here in Florida, even though you might think it's nicer here all year long, you must be outside even more. But these cities in Florida are really not pedestrian friendly. They weren't right. originally made for people walking around. So you need a car. And it's like shocking to see how many people do not walk around and they don't like even consider that an option. So it's not surprising at all. And there's a big difference in countries that are like us.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's a common thing that we share.
Right.
And that lifestyle that says, oh, no, you can make it up by going to the gym for mm-hmm. 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Or squeezing in a workout a few times a week.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting because I don't think we used the word in the beginning, but the article talked about this is reaching kind of pandemic levels. So this is one pandemic that, you know, obviously we're dealing with worldwide and the trends seem to be going in the wrong direction. Another one where the trends are going in the wrong direction is, let's talk about it, STDs. You know, it's something that's a little bit, people kind of cringe about a little bit. Obviously, it's pretty cringeworthy, unfortunately, but the prevalence of STDs is becoming even more, is increasing. You know, in recent years, you know, the CDC actually put out a report last year and talked about how STDs are at a record high. They said indicating more than 2 million cases of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis were reported in the United States in 2016, which is the highest number ever, according to the annual STD surveillance report. So this was from, obviously, that's 2016, and there was actually a recent article in The Economist that talked about why STDs are on the rise. And it's so interesting because we both heard about this recently on the radio, them talking about how STDs, or radio, or, you know, news, about how STDs are on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
I know I heard it on a podcast they were talking about, and person I'm familiar with when we talk about love and the sex, the Dr. Drew, who everybody remembers from Loveline, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He actually was talking about how he talked to some millennials, and they're kind of not unaware, but they don't seem to have they don't see the importance of safe sex, it seems that. In his words, you know, I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said. He said he spoke to millennials and they weren't really aware of safe sex practices or weren't subscribing to them,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of scary. Because I remember when we were growing up, that was kind of a huge thing. Especially like even like I think especially TV commercials, you know, you talked about safe sex and things like that. Well, I saw a lot of that when I was growing up.
Yeah, when you talk about, like, verboten subjects, I think STDs were definitely a topic for discussion, but I think the real big one was AIDS.
Yeah.
Like, that was in our day.
Yeah.
We're so old. But, like, when we were younger, that was really used as the major scare because mm-hmm. this was like, you know, if you got AIDS, that was the end. And it was like, it was pretty rapidly spreading, I think, around the time that we were younger and we were having health classes and, you know, teachers and family members or whomever were having discussions about being safe.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it really was a true fear, like an almost irrational fear that, like, people thought, like, you touch somebody with AIDS and you could get it. So, there's, like, it wasn't just – there was a lot of misunderstandings around it. And they used that a lot to scare kids. I haven't been in school, obviously, for a little bit, but I don't think that that's used the way it was, you know, I mean.
Right. Yeah, I mean, all I remember, you know, growing up, and I think we're going to go into this a little bit more about our sex education, but I definitely remember more of an emphasis on sex, safe sex growing up. Yeah. I don't know if that was just, you know, when you're kind of discovering that as in general in high school. Maybe that's how it is now, too. But it just seemed to be very, especially with commercials and, what is the word I'm looking for? I'm trying to say publication, but that's not right.
Propaganda?
Not even propaganda, like media.
Mainstream?
Yeah, and just like commercials and PSAs. That's what I'm looking for, PSAs. Way more PSAs I felt about that I thought, but it may have just been the time because it was something more I was more aware of.
Well, this might be like a societal kind of study, though, because I also think that we were children of the 80s.
Yeah.
And that was also the time when, like, sexual freedom and sexual independence, you know, you had people like Madonna and, you know, obviously some male, like, pop stars and stuff.
Prince.
Yeah, it was all, there's lots of, like, sexualization of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that right around that time period, because it was like, oh, my God, like, that was not the norm for our parents' generation, I don't think. And so there was, like, this flood of we must educate the population. I think that today even kids are kind of desensitized. Because it's everywhere.
You might be right, and that might be leading to some of these statistics. Like that, I mentioned the Economist article from 2018, from July of this year. They talked about some rates. Between 2000 and 2016, the rates of chlamydia rose 98%. That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
The rates of syphilis, which public health researchers once thought was on the cusp of eradication, has shot up fourfold. Rates for gonorrhea dropped 24% between 2000 and 2009, kind of that time frame when we were in college and getting out of college, but it has risen 48% since then. So it seems that now all these things are back on, you know, going right back up. And the article itself, in which we were kind of alluding to, is that it seems that people are becoming less worried about STDs. It just seems that they're not, like you said, being desensitized to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think we were beating over the head with it? Or is it just that there's less importance or emphasis on the importance now?
I think that it was, when we were kids, it was becoming mainstream, like a lot more things were like being sexualized and you know, sexual freedom and sexual independence and everything was just kind of starting. I mean, like, for both men and women, maybe it always existed for men, I don't know, I can't speak to that really, but I mean, I know, like, as a female, that's not historically been like, you're going to be sex. Like, if you were sexy, you were slutty.
Yeah.
And that was very negative. And then I feel like, you know, there are certain people that as a child, like, that were in, like, those role model kind of roles, they were very much about, like, being sexy and sexual, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think the reaction, like the knee-jerk, like, we are a country based on prudes, really.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that knee-jerk reaction came in that we must educate the youth. we must tell them that this is wrong. And there was a real big backlash that we were kind of in that wave of.
Yeah.
I think it was that backlash that led to, you know, the pointing of the fingers of like, you know, this isn't right, or telling us like, not even that it's wrong, but there's so many things we don't understand as kids, we have to understand. And you kids nowadays, I think they start with like sexual experimentation a lot younger. Yeah. And it's just so saturated into everything that they see and experience, which I'm just saying now as a parent is totally terrifying. But yeah, it's in everything and everywhere.
Yeah, it seems that like in this article, the Economist article says that, you know, STD prevention, the public spending on STD prevention has fallen by 40% in America since 2003.
That's got to be a huge part too.
And that's interesting to think about how, like you said, it seems that the sexualization of both men and women. Both men and women is much more prevalent nowadays. It's also much more readily available to people at younger ages too.
Yeah.
So, and obviously I think that's another issue with technology and things like that, social media. But in there's no compensation for that on the other end. Like we talked about promoting safe sex or promoting STD prevention. There has been mm-hmm. no equal compensation for some reason, which yeah. is kind of... I wonder why that is. I mean, is it because they didn't have anything that was a pandemic or a epidemic like AIDS? Have we not had it? Now it seems we're getting to that level, and now maybe the ship's going to be turned down.
I think it's a combination. I mean, I don't think that, and this is one of the reasons we're talking about this, is because in terms of health and fitness, STDs used to be discussed by like your gym teachers.
Yeah.
And so like in sexual health is very tied to your overall health and fitness.
Right.
So there are huge aspects of attention and focus given to sexual health and its impact on other parts of your life in very ancient health sciences, mm-hmm. like even Ayurveda that I'm studying a little bit more, that has a whole side of it. It's like sleep, nutrition, movement and your sexual mm-hmm. activity. Those are like the pillars of health.
Yeah.
And we as a society have been probably ignoring some of those more than others. And, I mean, it's not taught as a health concern.
That's interesting, you know.
And it kind of should be.
Yeah, and like you said, you kind of hit on it earlier about our Puritan roots, how it was...
Damn Puritan.
How it's... Puritans. Yeah, that's from Puritans. Your neck of the woods, not me.
I know.
It's not me. Like, three states below that. Like, there was no Puritans in Maryland. Anyways... But
them New Englanders.
Yes. Ugh. But yeah, that's something that's really interesting talking about, and that was kind of the subject we wanted to get into, is about, you know, how we think maybe sex ed should be approached. And you kind of, I think you just laid a great template as just it's part of your fitness and health.
Yeah.
You know, exercise and sleep, and then your mental fitness or mental health, and then sexual health. It's also a big part of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got to get over the taboo of it, because it's very important, and without education, that's what leads to, I think, things like this.
Yeah, and I mean
it leads to rise in diseases.
If you're sitting there and you're telling kids like how to consume less calories, and that's considered like a really fundamental part of their health education, mm-hmm. then they should also know like healthy sexual expressions,
right.
healthy and safe sexual right. expressions in the same way, because guaranteed, like, lack of sexual health is going to lead to a lot more emotional health, which is going to lead to a lot more physical health issues.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, depression that causes, you know, obesity or that causes overeating and bad habits and inactivity. I mean, a lot of it could stem from the fact that we don't, as a society, give a whole lot of attention to sexual health.
Did you have a sex ed course in school?
I had health class. Mm-hmm. I think it was held... I'm trying to remember if it was a separate class from gym or if it took over our period for gym, like, a certain number of times. I can't remember, to be honest. I remember, like, I would go to a classroom and that it was a class. Like, mm-hmm. we would know we were going to health class. And it was in high school. So, like, that was the only time that I had health class. I think it was probably only, like, 1 or 2 years. I don't know if it was, like, something... I can't really remember. My senior year of high school was a bit of a blur. Right. But, yeah, the most dramatic thing I remember from health class was somebody had a seizure in the middle of one of my health classes.
Right.
And that definitely stood out in my mind and just totally ran over. But we also talked not just about sex ed. It was also, like, drugs.
Yeah.
Like, don't do drugs. So those topics being lumped together, I mean, that just shows you kind right. of the very odd, disproportionate
Yeah, I don't know. It seems focus. Like maybe, especially, you know, I went to Catholic grade school, middle school, and high school. So it seemed to be not a very prominent topic. I remember fifth grade, cartoon video explaining how babies are made. And then I don't even know if we had anything talking about it
in high school. You know what movie I watched? The Monty Python one.
I don't even know. What did they put out? Some type of... No. Instructional video about sex.
Somebody comment and let us know. There was, like, a Monty Python movie, but it was like all about, like, the process of life or something like that. I mean, it was kind of trippy. It was like watching, like, an acid trip or something. Mm. But I remember, like sitting there going, what the fudge am I watching? And it was also kind of funny because, you know, Monty Python was a bunch of British dudes.
Yeah.
Which was hilarious hearing them talk about sex. But, yeah, I remember watching that, and that might have actually been, like, earlier in, like, sixth or seventh grade.
Wow, bold by that teacher.
But I think also, like, it was probably like a gym teacher or something.
Yeah, just letting it turn it on and walking out of the room.
Yeah. Well,
regardless, I think obviously these stats are more than enough reason to start hitting on this topic a little bit more frequently. And maybe, you know, I don't know what age you should start with this. And I'm sure middle school is probably a great age, but now kids are younger and younger, like we talked about.
They're and
more sexualized earlier and earlier.
Like, they're like fooling around before they're even teenagers.
Don't even say that.
But here's the thing. I've like read up on like how different cultures kind of approach sexual education and like even just as basic as naming the body parts and knowing and not making like sex a taboo thing or like a scandalous thing, but really like empowering, like for women especially, is a really big topic for women because mostly women and girls today are still considered skanky or slutty if they're screwing around. And that's not, like, healthy sexual experimentation. It's considered, ooh, that girl's a hoe. And I don't really know what they call it today when you're 11 years old. If there's an 11-year-old listening to this, I'm sorry. But that there's still, like, negativity around that.
There's a stigma on it, for sure.
So other cultures, like, Amsterdam or not Amsterdam. It was somewhere, like, in the Scandinavian countries, I think, like Sweden.
Yeah.
But they had a study that looked at how those women perceived like sex and understanding and education. And when they were taught from like a young age, and when it was like they were taught their body parts, they were talked about, you know, pleasure, the pleasure aspect of sex, they had more confidence in themselves, and their like country, I think, had, you know, a better reputation for sex. So it was like the females having a bit more knowledge and not being at the whim of a guy.
Right.
And this is probably going to get into some crazy feminist talk. I don't know. All I know is that I was reading about this because I'm like, how the heck do I prepare my daughter for life?
Right.
And I remember talking to you about it and saying, we need to teach her the basic level. Like, we at least need to teach her her body parts. Boys learn their body parts from a very young age. Girls, it's like all cutesy names. And it's like, oh, those are your lady bits, and that's your lady part.
And you say, I have to say vagina. Is that what you're telling
me? To say vagina, okay. Or, you know, say like what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot more parts in there than just a vagina, too, let's be honest.
Okay.
You're going to have to learn them. Oh, I'm just kidding.
How dare you?
You should already know them.
How dare you?
If you don't already know all of them. but seriously.
I get it. I agree.
Girls have to learn all the guy parts.
I don't know how many parts you guys need to know about.
Well, I mean, like, there's, like, the basics, the anatomy.
Yes. And anatomy, like, is important. I agree.
Nick is blushing furiously right blushing. Now.
I just said vagina.
All
right.
You are blushing, though, about, like, all of these different parts. But that's what I mean. It's like, when it comes to guys, you learn about testicles and penis and all of that. And, like, that's common. Girls don't even learn their parts.
Well, no, we will. We'll break the cycle.
So, yeah, I already started referring to Ella the vagine, which is, I guess, Swedish for vagina.
Wow. I did not know that.
So,
we're going to teach her Swedish.
What do you know? She's going to be a multicultural child.
Multi what?
Multicultural.
Okay. All right.
But I think that teaching kids from a young age about the fact that sex isn't just a, like, privileged thing. It's not just something you give or you receive. It's something that you have to learn about and know about, and like there's a certain amount of responsibility on you as an individual, mm-hmm. and that you have every right to feel pleasure, but it's kind of like a skill.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that it's all anatomy. It's it's biology.
I understand. It's I'm on board with that. Like I said, I know, I think I'm just dreading it in my head actually doing it. You know, saying it out loud and it makes sense to me, but actually having to do it eventually,
well, or sooner rather than later. How did your parents have the birds and bees talk to you?
It was basically, I can't remember how it happened. They just asked if, I must have said something. I said something to someone, you know, I don't know if it was at school or something like that. And then, obviously, they wanted to clarify it and asked if I had any questions about it. And they were like, what did I understand, what I knew, and then kind of helped to give me more details on that and build on what I knew.
So you had, like, a discussion about it.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't lengthy because I think, like, and I feel like, and, you know, obviously my mom being a doctor and being kind of basically in the education field for her entire life, her adult life, essentially, she was much better at it than, you know, me and my dad who were in the conversation, because it was just like, oh gosh, where do I look? But yeah, I could see, you know, I remember it being somewhat awkward, but I feel like it might be that way a lot, you know. I don't know. I feel like, and it might be just because, like you said, it's not really talked about.
It's not talked about.
Until a certain age, until it actually comes up. You know what I mean? If the kid either brings it up or a situation happens where you kind of have to address it.
Yeah.
It's really kind of being, hopefully, I don't know if the hope is people are just like, oh, just hopefully it just doesn't even, they pass over it.
I think traditionally the hope has been if we don't talk about it, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's not going to enter our house. But knowing the way that the world is now, it's getting to your kids sooner than you even think.
Yes.
They're able. And like, granted, they don't comprehend what they're seeing in movies and things until they are of a certain maturity.
Right.
But absolutely, without a doubt, before you acknowledge the fact that this is something that's happening, they're going to already have been thinking about it.
No, you're right.
So it's not a like ostrich in the sand kind of situation, which I think it has been.
Yeah, I agree.
I got a book. I didn't even get a talk. I got a book. My parents gifted me a book. It was Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul, and it was like the whole book on relationships and sex and all that stuff, and it was like.
I did not remember that part of that book.
Well, there's like a bunch of them.
That's true.
But yeah, I got the one that was like on sex.
All right.
So, and you better believe I read that book cover to cover going, what?
Say what?
Say what? But I will say I thought it was informative, but I'll probably learn more elsewhere. So.
All right. Well, takeaways. We're going to talk to Ella tomorrow about sexuality, right? Is that what you're telling me? Maybe we'll give it a couple more months. Right?
I think we probably got a couple more years front of us.
True.
But it's every parent's choice on how they want to do it. But I think that we're going to teach her the basic, like, biology of her body and, like, the biological differences. And I'm going to teach her specifically about her hormones.
All right.
All that, the joy that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also something.
Teach you to punch and kick.
They don't even teach you in freaking college that well. Endocrinology.
There we go.
And yeah, and you're going to teach her how to kick handsy boys.
Yes. I'll show her.
Man bits.
Where the man bits are. And then tell her how to kick, grab, squeeze, pull.
Oh, God.
Stuff, you know.
Talk about uncomfortable.
Anyway. All right. So. If you guys have any comments on that great discussion we just had about, sexual education, please let us know by dropping us a line on either the iTunes reviews, the Facebook page, or on the email, which you can find all those contacts at addictedtofitnesspodcast.com. You got anything else for them?
After that, heck
yeah,
no.
I think we gotta walk off right now. Go out on a high
drop
note.
Drop the mic. Excited. Let's just go.
This has been another edition of the Addicted to Fitness Podcast, and we'll check you next time.
Bye-bye.
For all things Addicted to Fitness, you can check out our website, addictedtofitnesspodcast.com. You can also give us a follow on Twitter, @TheATFPodcast, and like and follow the Addicted to Fitness Podcast Facebook page. Last but not least, please give us a rating and review in the iTunes store. Thanks. Thanks for stopping by and checking out another edition of the Oh, my goodness.
This is getting old. You sounded like Porky Pig.